Welcome to The Good Stuff with the Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We are here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And Carissa, I think you might have some insight into how other people feel about Sonoma County because you have just gotten back from an important trip.
Yeah, to Houston.
All right.
Can I tell you, Texas loves wine in general, and they love Sonoma County wine. So, and we're doing our best to bring more Sonoma County wine to those super fans down in specifically Houston, but obviously all over Texas as well. So,
well, they're
you're being really not very clear on what you were doing.
Yeah,
I'm hearing this hesitation.
I know. I'm like, where do I start?
Yeah.
What were they drinking?
I feel like you weren't asking that great of a question there. I'm not sure.
It was the beginning of my question.
Okay, there you go.
So I don't think your answer was very good either,
Well,
Carissa.
Fair enough. This is like not the good stuff at all.
We're already fighting. I don't know.
Not the good stuff.
Right. Okay. So you were in Houston. Very big event. They love Sonoma County wine.
Thanks for asking. So, yes, we have this wonderful partnership, Sonoma County Wine Growers. Well, actually, two partnerships. One with Landry's, which is a huge organization, but they have 600 different restaurants, 60 different restaurant concepts, including Mastro's and Morton's and Chart House and Del Frisco's, and the list goes on, all which have very nice wine lists that include a number of Sonoma County wines. In fact, Landry's is the largest on-premise buyer of Sonoma County wine in the United States. So pretty great partner there. Through that partnership, they connected us with the Houston Rockets basketball team, which is super fun because we've really been leaning into this idea of bringing wine and intersecting with sports as an opportunity to really reach younger fans, new fans, a diverse audience, and meet them where they're hanging out, already having a great time, and maybe really changing the way they think about beverages at an arena, at a ballpark. We sort of started with the San Francisco Giants last year, and now this year have a great partnership with the Rockets. So we were down there for our, not only do they bring in and are buying Sonoma County wine for the Toyota Center, which is where the Houston Rockets play, and there's also concerts there year-round. So they brought in, they're buying wine for their suites, the restaurants, that will be featured throughout the season and into the concert season. But we are doing a monthly winemaker dinner with them. So it's actually in the restaurant at the Houston Rockets at the Toyota Center. We're featuring three wineries for each winemaker dinner, asking the wineries to send a grower or winemaker to Houston and hosting before the game. So these super fans get to come enjoy a winemaker dinner, and then roll right into the basketball game. So it's like a win-win. So we launched our first one literally last night, February 2nd, at the Toyota Center. And we featured Running Strong and St. Francis and Dutton Goldfield wines, and had our partners all down there talking about Sonoma County. And the master sommelier, Keith Goldston of the Landry's Restaurants, was also there sort of presenting a little bit of knowledge on the Sonoma County wine region. So just a fantastic partnership and fun and go basketball.
Always go basketball.
I actually
baseball.
Know something about basketball, so that's a kind of exciting. Like, I was a scrappy, short point guard basketball player in my youth, and so it's really fun because I know nothing really about baseball, and I was never good with a bat. So, at least not in terms of hitting a ball.
There's still time.
So I can aspire, I guess. I can aspire.
What sort of feedback do you get, though, just broadly speaking, about the wines? I mean, Sonoma County offers so much diversity.
Yeah.
It's the sustainability. It's the family generational kind of.
Yes. I mean, I think it's all of that. I mean, I think the thing that stands out first and foremost is just the quality. I mean, I think just fans are so pleased and not surprised, because it's not that they don't expect this world-class quality from Sonoma County, but I think it's a surprise to be in an arena, like at a basketball game, drinking like top world-class quality wine. So that's like the first like win.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the diversity. I mean, it's fun. We can showcase a Sauve Blanc to a Cabernet to a Pinot to a Chard to an obscure Riesling that we have 1 acre planted to in the whole county. Like, that's fun. So I think it makes it fun for our partners. It makes it fun for the wine lovers that are there enjoying Sonoma County and enjoying this experience. And like you said, they get to meet the makers, right? They get to meet the winemakers, the growers. They're accessible. And that's not something that just happens when you come to Sonoma County everywhere. And I think we're going to hear a great story today from our guests about that very thing. But also they get to meet them in where they're at, because the winemakers, the growers travel and want to share their story on the road. So win, 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 win.
Yeah.
Lots
amazing.
Of wins.
Amazing. Lots of wins. Okay. Was that a better question? That was a better answer.
Thank you. I know. You gave me a moment to reset there, so I appreciate that.
All right. Well, when we come back, we will be joined by two guests, father-son Steve and Alex Kanzler, founders of Kanzler Vineyards, and we'll get into their story.
It's going to be great.
We are back on The Good Stuff. I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz, and our guests today are Steve and Alex Kanzler, father and son, founders of Kanzler Vineyards. Welcome in. I'll let them tell their story, but I wanted to ask, my understanding, Steve, is that you first planted wine grapes in Sonoma County in 1996. Is that about right?
That's correct. And we were one of the very first vineyards that was planted in western Sonoma County, especially in our neighborhood, which was all apple orchards, mm-hmm. and where there weren't apples, there were cows, basically. And we ended up with 20 acres that was an old, decrepit apple orchard. Mm-hmm. And we had really bought the property with the purpose of building a house that we did, and then we learned some lessons about owning property in Sonoma County, which is that it's very expensive to own that property, yeah. unless it's producing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, taxes, irrigation control, everything else. So we asked our friends and neighbors what to do. I mean, we first tried planting raspberries, and it's great to go out and get them for breakfast, but they're... you know, they're water-intensive, labor-intensive, and have a shelf life of about 10 nanoseconds.
Absolutely.
So our next-door neighbor happened to be, and still is to this day, Perry Kozlowski.
Oh, yeah.
And we asked Perry, as a Sonoma County royalty farmer, what should we do with our property, Perry? And Perry said, Steve, you can plant apples in 48 states, okay? You yes. can grow premium wine grapes in about 3 places in the world. Okay, you're living in one of them. If that was yeah. my property, I plant grapes. And this is the guy that has the property next to mine,
right.
which is an apple orchard.
Right, yeah.
It's now a vineyard,
it
too.
It is.
But that's really how we started, is we had a big piece of property and we needed to do something with it. And we planted wine grapes. And that was in 1996.
And what brought you to Sonoma County? Where are you from originally?
Well, actually brought us back to California.
Okay.
Alex and his sister were actually born in Berkeley, where okay. we lived at the time. And then we made a sojourn up to the Seattle, to the Northwest for work. We were up there for about 6 years. And then we came back and settled in Sonoma County, and specifically in Sebastopol, because we liked the schools.
That makes sense. Mom missed the sun. She wasn't going to, you guys did yeah. what? We did 5 years in Seattle. I was a little kid, and I think Mom was like, yeah, it's time to go back to California.
We got sick of watching the fireworks explode into the fog belt, okay, on July 4th, right. in her down jacket. Okay, we did miss California, for sure.
That's pretty funny. So, and then, I mean, this is a little atypical story, because I think we often hear the multi-generational story that's very... common, I would say, fortunately, in Sonoma County, we have so many of those great stories. But then you hear this, I had such a passion for wine and grapes, and I moved here to plant. But instead, you had a passion to keep your property, realizing you needed to do something with it.
Well, you know, we had a passion for, you know, being in the community
yeah.
and kind of merging with the community and what we were doing.
I love that.
I mean, we were look, I had a lot of great mentors that were helping me mm-hmm. out. I mean, Rhonda Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
And Steve Dutton and Dan Goldfield.
I know a few things about him.
You know.
I've heard he's nice.
And they all kind of like took this guy that knew really nothing and held them by the hand and said, this is what we would do. This is where we think you can make the biggest contribution to your land and to the community and how you can fit in. I mean, it was all about that, really.
I mean, there just wasn't that much happening yet in Pino, in the Russian River, or anywhere in Sonoma County at that point. I mean, this is just about 10 years before Sideways. It's a little bit before, you know, a lot of smaller artisanal brands started buying grapes from lots of vineyards and making them kind of famous.
Well, and actually Rhonda gets a lot of credit for that, because she did, when we were in the process, when I was trying to figure out what to do, Rhonda held a seminar called From Grass to Grapes, which was targeted at the dairy farmers and a lot of the apple farmers. And at that seminar, I met, you know, talked to Rhonda, met a bunch of other people in the industry, but met the guy who's still our vineyard manager and actually planted, Eric Neal, who is, you know, for the last 30 years, he planted our vineyard, and for the last 30 years, he's been our vineyard manager. And then it was that, and then talking to people like Perry, who, you know, kind of like took this New York City boy and
he said, this guy's going to need some help.
and gave him the confidence and the advice to actually become a farmer.
But I do love that, because I think that is more of our traditional story, is the collaboration you talk about in the community that you talk about that is very special in Sonoma County. And I think especially in West County, I mean, everyone just kind of helps each other, which is always a surprise when you think about, at the end of the day, on the shelf, it's a very competitive business, whether it's wine brands you're competing or other beverages. But here in Sonoma County, when you're thinking about farming and planting and learning, it's really an open book, and everyone wants to help each other. And it's part of why I love my job and keep showing up every day, because I love that sort of DNA of our community.
I can't tell you how dramatically true that is, because I spent most of my career in high tech.
Yeah.
Believe me, nobody was reaching out, okay, to hold my hand and try and teach me the business. Everybody was trying to cut their throat. And it was, I say this, the winemaking business is and the wine growing business is a very genteel and community-oriented business. Pretty special to be in it. Feel very lucky and grateful, actually.
Especially as an accidental farmer. I mean, again, you do hear, like, Chrissy, your point. Like, there are people, I've always dreamed of owning a vineyard. I've been passionate about wine since I traveled to Italy in my 20s and, you know, roll that story out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my mom and dad were looking for a community and looking for a school system. And, you know, obviously still proximity to the Bay Area and the Giants and the 49ers and the International Airport and the ballet and all that good stuff. But yeah, the grape growing was really, they were accidental farmers.
Yeah. So what did you first plant?
You know, we first planted, I mean, that there's a little bit of a story there too, because we first planted 12 acres of Pinot and 4 acres of Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. And by the second year, the Pinot trunks all looked to be about the size of my thumb, and the Chardonnay was maybe about half the size of my pinky.
Little babies.
And Eric said to me, said, look, Stephen, I can probably nurse this Chardonnay along, but your property really loves Pinot. So we actually pulled out the 4 acres of Chardonnay, sold it as dormant, as basically bench grass to the winery less than a half a mile away.
You're incubating
where it prospered, we now have what we call new vines and old vines Pinot.
Even though
there's only 2 years difference in the growth, but
well, you know,
96 and 98.
It was important when they were fifth leaf and seventh leaf. Now when it's like 21 and 23 or whatever.
Yeah.
So you started selling those grapes, I imagine, at the beginning. You were a grower only.
Right.
And how did you kind of first know you had something? Did you have some of these mentors coming around saying, I'll take a few of these grapes off your hand? Or
We had at the same time that our fruit was coming basically into first crops, we met Dan Costa and Michael Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and we were original investors in Costa Brown.
Nice.
And one of the part of the deal, they were looking for fruit sources. They were looking for two things. They were looking for money, and they were looking for fruit sources. we add some of both.
Okay.
And so that became a long-term relationship.
Wonderful.
Between Kanzler and Kosta mm-hmm. Browne. We also were selling to Landmark. We sold to Gary Farrell back in the beginning. You know, so for 6 or 7 years, we were basically just farmers and growers. And the way we became a winery is another interesting story if you've got time for it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we do.
But I was going to jump in, Alex. So you grew up. So when did you were 5, 6, 7 when you moved from Seattle to Sonoma County? Was that?
Yeah, I went to kindergarten in Woodinville, Washington, and I went to first grade at Apple Blossom Elementary.
Well, there you go.
Sebastopol, California.
Can't get more Sonoma County than that.
In
a rural community than Apple Blossom is the name of the school.
Especially in what is kind of now the Sebastopol Hills. And there's still orchards around that school, and now there's vineyards around that school, obviously.
So
there's probably going to be cannabis around the school in another year.
You know, right? So you grew up essentially on the vineyard. Did you know? I mean, this is now your life, work, and passion. So you get to be a little bit of that story. Hey, I grew up on a vineyard. Did you know that this is something you wanted to do, or when did you figure that out?
Yeah, certainly not growing up. I mean, if my folks are accidental farmers, in some ways I'm an accidental winemaker. You know, as a kid, you're growing up, you don't really kind of even register what's going on when the vineyard's mm-hmm. going in. I mean, they started installing the vineyard when I was like 10 years old, and the only thing I remember really clearly is they had to clear all the apple trees, pile them all up to burn them, to get rid of them. And I remember like them, the explosion when they like shot a flare gun at a big, you know, gargantuan pile of apple trees. And I'm like, I don't know, watching TV and eating mac and cheese, and there's like flames out the window. And I'm like,
what just happened?
That's fun for a 10-year-old boy. I'm surprised I didn't let you do the flamethrower.
Totally, I'm poking around the tractors and the D8s that they had ripping the property. But no, at any rate, it doesn't register. And Sebastopol, California, in, you know, the early aughts, as a teenager, you feel like you're in the corner of the universe. You know, Sebastopol's a lot cooler now, and it's got a food scene and the wine scene stepped up and all that. But back then it was much quieter. And there was a dairy farm, still is, next to my high school. So like you felt like you were kind of like in Hickville. And then you go out and you see the world, and you go to college and travel a little bit, and you go, oh, Northern California wine country, not the worst place to build a life. So I fell back into the community, into the industry after college.
What's your role now? So we haven't really covered what you both do.
We haven't. I was going to mention, I mean, I think looking at some of your history, Alex, you worked at Landmark, which was mentioned earlier, one of the wineries that bought Kanzler grapes. But you also spent some time in New Zealand and in Oregon before really, you know, sort of committing. You did some time with Kosta Browne, which makes perfect sense, given, were they the first vineyard designate for you and maybe the only one for many years?
Kosta Browne, Kosta Browne, we had three that came out at pretty much the same time. Kosta Browne was the first one. Landmark was also a vineyard designate. And then Dave Latin, if you remember.
I do.
Dave Latin and CL Wines. Okay, those were the first three that we had. Okay, and then we stayed with Kosta Browne and with Landmark. And and there were a few people that changed around in there. Gary Farrell came in and out. But, you know, for those first 7 years when we were, you know, when we were selling all our fruit, those were the main ones.
Yeah, pretty significant, though. Significant partnerships, especially Kosta Browne. You wouldn't have necessarily known that they were going to have the success that they had.
No, I mean, it was actually Chris Costello, who was the third member. Mm-hmm. Chris Costello did such a compelling spreadsheet that we said, okay, we'll take a flyer on this one. And, you know, and Landmark, I actually went to work at Landmark because I wanted to, as a cellar rat, because I wanted to understand what the winemaking side of the business was. And that's where we met our first winemaker, Greg Stock, who's still at Landmark.
Okay,
he was our winemaker before Alex took over.
Okay, so Alex comes in what, 10 years ago, 2014? Is that about right?
Yeah, so I got into the industry in 2008. You know, I graduated college in spring 2008 to a rip-roaring economy and two liberal arts degrees under my belt.
Yeah.
You know, Fortune 500 banging down my door. You know, ready to sign me up. So I was like, I'm going to take kind of a gap year. I'm going to move to the mountains and like get a job at a ski resort. all right, how am I going to like save some money for, you know, first, last, and security deposit to do that? Yeah. Like, oh, harvest. Like, I can get a job doing a grape harvest somewhere.
Yeah.
And I had worked in the vineyards in high school for Eric. That's a different story. So I'd like done a little bit of viticulture and obviously kind of like grown up around it. It's getting a little bit more familiar as I'm in my early 20s. So I got into the industry in 08 and kind of got bitten by the bug. And, you know, you hear that expression in the wine world. So I did Harvest at Landmark in 08, Central Otago, New Zealand at Carrick, Spring 09, came back to Domaine Serene in Oregon, fall 2009, moved back home that winter, started taking classes at the JC, started working in tasting rooms, and then did the following harvest at Kosta Browne. So after the three harvests, kind of moved back to California and reestablished it as my home base, and I've been working in different facets of the industry since.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to continue with Alex and Steve Kanzler of Kanzler Vineyards.
And try some of these wines.
Yes. Good stuff with Alex and Steve Kanzler of Kanzler Vineyards. And when we left, Alex was telling us a little bit about how he found his way back to Sevastopol and to Kanzler Vineyards. But we wanted to even go back further in time to how you transitioned from grape growers to a winery.
Well, and as he's telling that story, I actually want to try the wine. So sorry. Oh, there it is. That's my favorite sound. Okay, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt, but like just making sure.
Carissa always makes sure that we have
to
wine
the
to drink.
Good stuff.
Here it is.
Completely.
You know.
Completely.
So good. Okay, now, sorry, Alex. Now it's all you. There you
go. I'll take this one. I mean, as usual in our family, there's a story involved. And the story of our winery, it was really a winery that was born at a wedding.
Okay. Always
and
interesting.
Well, I haven't heard that one.
Well, what happened is we were growers, as we were talking about earlier.
Cheers.
And my daughter wanted to get married. Okay. Her and her husband wanted to get married on the vineyard. So prior to that wedding, Greg, I told you, Greg Stock, who's now at Landmark, and I, the previous year, or the previous two years earlier, we had this, it was a long fall. They picked all the fruit, okay, but fall stretched in long enough that there were the primaries that they missed in a bunch of seconds.
Crap.
And
nice.
Greg and I bought a half barrel Francois Frere, picked all the remaining fruit, and bottled it in Shiners.
Love it.
We made about 12 cases. My daughter, having the wedding on the vineyard, also wanted to drink our wine and serve our wine at our wedding. Well, the only wine we didn't have Kosta Browne, we didn't have Landmark, but we did have these 12 cases that we had bottled ourselves.
Nice.
So we made a specific label for their wedding. Melissa and James,
like
called the wedding wine.
King Co's quality label.
Yeah. Perfect.
And we served that wine at the wedding. And it was a big wedding. There was like 150,
I was going to say 12 cases. How far did that, I mean,
it was a party wedding too. Because
they drank it all.
Yeah, wow. I'm not surprised.
Okay.
So your first vintage essentially sold out.
Yeah.
Totally.
In one day. One day it sold out.
Kind of a biased clientele, but
they drank it all. They said it was the best Pinot. And this was a big wedding, and people came from all over the country. They said it was the best Pinot they ever had, and you guys should start making wine.
And that's all it took.
And that's actually how, that was actually the impetus. I mean, it was all of those people enjoying themselves gave Greg and I the confidence to say, hey, we should make some wine of our own. We have the fruit.
Yeah.
We have a test case. It was a success. Let's make some wine. So
the next year
we made 250 cases. That was our first vintage, and 2004, the first Kanzler label vintage.
Took more than one night to sell out that vintage.
I was going to say, that's a little more. That's a couple of good parties.
Yeah. Yeah. But the timing was serendipitous, too, because, I mean, mentioned it earlier, you know, when they planted the vineyard, it was early for Pinot Noir, especially in Sebastopol. Was there Pinot planted there? Yeah, a couple select vineyards, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is today. And 2004, my sister got married in June 2004, that sideways or like right about that time, and it was kind of that meteoric rise of New World Pinot Noir, so the timing hit really nicely as well, and people are getting big scores and the critics are on board and the mailing lists are filling up, and it was also that like kind of golden age of like mailing list wines and like the beginning of the sort of DTC movement that is supporting a lot of wineries still today.
Yeah, I mean, it is really serendipitous timing and so interesting. So do you think, I mean, were you already thinking about it, though? I mean, you must have had some conversations with Greg about making a wine, or really it was just the wedding and the reception that people
had? We were talking about it, but I mean, like a lot of things in life and business, you kind of need an impetus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need something
confirmation
that really is kind of like a proof taste that gives you the confidence to go forward. I mean, and, you know, at that point in time, we felt really good. We had a good product. And also, I have to say, you know, we had Kosta Browne, we had Landmark, we had other people.
You had a good resume.
We had a good resume. 100%. So when we, I mean, our very first wine, when we submitted it to Wine Spectator, got 94 points in 2004. Yeah. And they said, you know, that's unheard of for a new winery. And so... You know, there was some serendipity, but there was also some hard work that went into it. We had established ourselves already as premium quality, you know, growers.
Yeah.
So the next logical step was to actually, you know, take on, you know, the next big challenge.
Which I think consumers love when they know a wine, and they know a vineyard through other wine brands and other winemakers, and then they finally get to see the owner's expression of the vineyard and the site and what you would do. And so I always think that's like a fun, and you're seeing a lot of that in Sonoma County because we're a little different than the typical kind of estate model that might exist in other wine regions. But Alex, so then you come in to be winemaker. So how does that transition happen? And are you nervous or excited? I mean, that's a lot of like pressure to be making your brand wine.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And timing wise was interesting as well. So we kind of got into my backstory, and I moved home and made Sonoma County my base of operations in early 2010. But then I held other jobs all the way up through 2014. I took over the family winemaking in summer 2011. So I kind of finished polished bottled the 2010s, and then 11 forward have been mine. 2011, kind of a tough vintage to take over. But you know,
it was testing your real interest and desire right there with the 2011.
Right. Absolutely.
Are you ready?
Yeah. And as my, you know, dad mentioned earlier, and as we all kind of see, and one of the reasons why we love this community is it's very like rising tide lifts all boats. So I had great mentors, I had great resources, even though like, you know, I'm the one losing sleep that night. Like, do I pick it? Do I not pick it? Is this ferment going to stick? You know, all those kind of like harvest concerns as a pretty young winemaker, but I had good experience under my belt. Even just having a light academic background, like I got pretty close to an associate's degree in vit and enology at the JC. I didn't finish it because I started working.
Great program. Yeah,
but it's a great program, and they have a winery that they can teach you stuff at. They have vineyards that they can teach you stuff at. It's very hands-on. It's not theoretical.
Great community asset for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. So I took over in summer 2011. Those wines in the long run ended up being some of our favorites. It's still kind of what we pull when we want to show an aged wine. Six was that vintage for a long time, and six finally kind of, you know, lost its luster a little bit. We were still drinking sixes like 2 or 3 years ago. Now we're drinking 11s and stuff in that realm. But yeah, anyway, you know, from my sister's wedding to me entering the industry, it was a really slow burn. You know, I was working other jobs. It was, you know, my parents were busy doing other things. It was kind of their, you know, passion project on the side. And it really wasn't until, you know, I was the first full-time employee in 2014. We brought in our first outside employee in early 2016 to be kind of a general manager, run the business more. We roped my wife Brianna in later that year, took her out
family
of this
business.
We took her out of this small company she was working for called Apple to work for Kanzler Vineyards. So Really good for Candler Vineyards. Terrible for Alex and Brianna's household budget.
Yeah, say, the cafeteria situation's a little different in those two environments.
Yeah, the perks are not the same.
Yeah. But you drink well. You drink well. Yeah, that's
true. And we have flexible time off at Candler Vineyards.
Yes, that's good.
And then, yeah, we've just been really, I mean, we've always kind of wanted to make one more bottle than we're able to sell. So our growth has been like very modest. We want to keep our arms wrapped around everything. You know, we're farmers first and we're grape to glass. So like, we're not just going to go buy fruit from whomever because we think we can, you know, ramp up the production on some SKU or, you know, ride some wave or anything. We're very diligent and very slow. And that kind of takes us up to today and really what we're going to be about in the future.
Well, and you have a whole new thing, and I know we're just about to take a break, but I think you're working on being able to invite people into the property so they can taste directly with you at the site, which is a very magical thing. And
that's,
sounds like
that's the big news.
I was going to say, I know, breaking news. Yeah. No, so maybe we'll take a break and come back and hear about that.
Back on the Good Stuff with Steve and Alex Candler, and my understanding is this is going to be a very big year for you and the Candler brand because finally, after many years of suffering, you will be opening a tasting room. Tell us where it's going to be, what it's going to be, and how people can find you in the meantime.
Very excited about that. Yeah, we won't even get into the details of what it takes to kind of permit and open an estate tasting room in California in 2023-2024. But the tasting room is going to be right on the estate. You know, we've kind of been alluding to this the entire time, but like, this is a true family business. Yeah. It is anchored by that 20-acre property that my folks found and developed, and now we're trying to carry the torch. So we have a good DTC presence. We have a lot of customers. We have people that probably would visit us at, you know, more of a retail outlet, but it's just not what our brand is. It's all about being on the property, tasting with a family member. It's usually Brianna that's hosting tastings, and you really get a sense of the place. Even the residence itself is smack dab in the middle of the vineyard. It's not like at a corner. You can tell that they built the house first and the vineyard came later, because if you were going to farm, you wouldn't put the house right in the middle of everything.
Yeah. So you're not going to hang your laundry out to dry anymore, because there's going to be like visitors there
exactly.
Fine wine.
No, we got good spacing, but yeah, you come down the exact same driveway that you would come down to the residence for the house that I grew up in, that my sister got married in, that we host farmstay guests at now.
Nice.
So we have been able to welcome more people to the property through the farmstay and provide some tastings that way. But the tasting room is going to be a dedicated space where it's going to look out over the vines, and we'll really be able to welcome people, have events, and kind of just really, really get people immersed in the property.
Virginie and I look forward to our ribbon cutting invite.
100%.
We're good at ribbon cuttings.
So we want that. And tell folks how they find you, join your list. I assume you have a list because you're talking a lot about direct to consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Candler.com, KANZLER.com, or KanzlerVineyards.com. They both work.
Great.
We're on Instagram. I'm an old millennial, so not super great at the other social media.
Instagram at Candler Vineyards.
At Candler Vineyards. Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, visit us on the website. Our contact is everywhere. You can sign up for the mailing list and get a welcome allocation.
Great.
And then you'll be able to schedule tastings in early May. And this is, you know, planting the vineyard was my parents' generational investment. Constructing and launching this tasting room is Brianna and I's generational investment. We all know in the wine industry, you're not looking at quarterly returns here. You know,
it takes a while, the long game for sure.
Yeah, to build and execute and, you know, kind of lock in your program.
And we're drinking a Pinot right now.
Right, I was going to ask. So tell us a little bit about this wine, but also the other wines that you make, sort of the core of your portfolio.
Yeah, so I brought current releases because this is what we've have been selling in the recent past. And we opened the estate reserve because we're kind of talking about Kanzler Estate here.
And thank you for that.
Yeah. We make a couple different Pinot Noirs. We make a Chardonnay, and then we make a Rosé, a Pinot Noir, which is kind of a fun thing to have for the dinners and the events and stuff like that. But this is sort of the original wine, and this is the estate wine. So this is 100% from Kanzler Estate. There's no estate block in the vineyard. We don't farm a certain portion of the vineyard. Particularly, we don't use a specific clone. We farm everything to the best of our ability. We buy the best cooperage that we can based on our experience. We try to make the best pick calls that we can, best fermentation calls that we can. And then as the wine is on élevage, developing and barreled, then we're going in and tasting and looking for the specific characteristics to make this wine. Consequently, it's vintage specific. You know, it's really kind of a terroir driven, vineyard driven, vintage driven, you know, snapshot of the time and the place. So in a leaner year, it'll be a leaner wine. In a warmer year, it'll be a richer wine. But if you taste a vertical of this, you see the Kanzler thread woven through all of them. And it's really kind of a fun
And today it's a yummy wine. How about that? You missed that descriptor. A yummy wine.
A yummy wine, yes.
Very, very Sebastopol Hills, very Russian River Valley.
There you go. We think they're all yummy.
Okay? Yes.
But, you know, we actually, in what Alex said, the wine is made in the vineyard.
Absolutely.
Okay, and our focus has always been on the vineyard and the farmer's first mentality.
And stewarding the land, you know, we're going to have grapevines planted there for a long time. We think the original grapevines are going to be planted there for a long time. There's some interplanting that we're going to have to do, you know. We get ripped off by the gophers a little bit every year.
Yeah, they're hungry.
Pesky. Yeah. Thank you so much. Cheers. Thank you both for being on the show with
us
today.
Thank you for joining us.
Cheers.
Salud.
Salud.
Carissa, we are back to wrap things up on the good stuff. Yet another amazing generational story. Yeah. Farming community kind of has everything that we love to talk about here on the good stuff. And to drink.
So, you know, they don't know it yet, but they just donated their bottle of Chardonnay to my Tuesday night good stuff wine. So it is their Walker Station. They lease this vineyard and farm it. And it is the 2021 Chardonnay from Russian River Valley. So I'm very excited. You can even come over if you'd like to try some. I'm willing to share. So what do you got?
Well, I mean, I can't resist the Kanzler Estate Reserve Pinot Noir that we were able to enjoy today, the 2021. But I'm dreaming of the 2011 that they mentioned and spoke highly of, which I have no doubt. It's incredibly delicious. So I'm going to see if I can work some magic
and find a little
2011 Kanzler Pinot Noir.
Right? I mean, I think they're still listening, so maybe
I know, that was intentional.
There you go.
Yeah, I think if you want things, you have to state them out loud.
But, exactly.
So I think we're set.
So lots of good stuff today. Like you said, love the multi-generational. So maybe not the deep roots here, but planting solid roots here and already multi-generational story. So love that.
Well, always, and it's good to have a newer generation as well. I mean, tapping into that momentum that started in 2004 for Pinot Noir, for the DTC movement, all of that required new blood, new energy, new insight. And so for that, we are very grateful.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Good Stuff Hour today. Thank you to our guests, Alex and his father, Steve Kanzler. And from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.
It's family. It's family. My elder sister is prettier than you'd believe. My younger sister is prettier still and can sing. And I am the middle child, the boy with red hair and no smile. Not too secure, very unsure who to be. It's fair.